obviously, by Bazaar Stars. Rating, mature. Summary.
I just mean, doing the right thing because it's right is better than doing it because...
What? Drakey challenges, amused.
Better to do it because it's right, as opposed to doing it because it's not wrong. Please enlighten me on what the difference is.
You're the difference, is Harry's answer. Oh, Draco Malfoy comes up with a plan, drinks a lot of tea, and fails to fix a clock. Somewhere along the way, Harry Potter falls in love with him, which wasn't a part of the plan at all. Chapter 1. There are three things in this world Draco Malfoy knows without a shadow of a doubt. 1. Everyone who lays eyes on him secretly wants to touch his hair. 2. Albus Dumbledore's death was neither as dramatic nor as sad as people acted like it was. 3. There's no one who can consult Harry Potter better than he can. He can break all of these things down, if necessary. Like so. 1 is self-explanatory. It's his hair. Just look at it. 2 is also more simple than it seems on the surface. The fact of the matter is, Albus Dumbledore was basically ancient. By that point, it was beginning to get a bit concerning that he hadn't died yet. Old people die. It's sort of what they do. And the fact that it was murder, or mercy killing, depending on who's asked, doesn't negate that it was just the natural order of things. 3. Well, there's at least 6 years' worth of proof that Draco was the best at terrorising Harry Potter. Yes, that's including the Dark Lord. Because he wasn't making buttons specifically to mock Harry, now was he? No, that was Draco, who at the tender age of 14 showed more dedication and eye for detail than the man known for being the darkest wizard of his age. Also, Draco actually lived to tell the tale after all the history of terrorising, while the Dark Lord did not. So clearly he's the real winner here. Draco's never felt the first two certainties were under threat. But as he sits in the middle of the witch's ladle, and overhears a conversation he probably has no business listening to, he comes to the horrible conclusion that the last fact is under attack. Listen, Draco doesn't make a habit of eavesdropping on people in public anymore, because he's discovered it can lead to a lot of hurt feelings he'd much rather avoid. Even 6 years after the war, people rarely have lovely things to say about him, so he stopped trying to hear them out in the wild, like a fool desperate for even a hint of validation or, Merlin forbid, forgiveness. That being said, Draco can't resist listening in when he happens to come across some truly riveting drama or gossip, and the two women talking one booth over have that in abundance. His eyebrows had flown up his forehead multiple times at this point, because one of the women had been verbally abusing some poor sod he eventually works out as her current beau. She's not speaking very kindly of him at all. And at first, he's entirely on her side, despite not actually being a part of the discussion, simply because of all that she's saying. For example, things such as this.
I mean, he's a complete fucking nutter, you know. It's like he has no concept of my feelings, probably not even his own. Completely emotionally stunted.
And
you should have seen it. Just the way he acts about his house, as if he built it by hand, downright possessive of it, really.
And
actually, it's almost uncomfortable, yeah? The unhealthy attachment he has to them, even though I told him I wasn't really comfortable with it. His ex is part of that family. Don't I have a right not to be all right with that? I think I have a right to.
And
he's just thoughtless sometimes, is all. I want him to notice when I like something or want something. I don't want to have to tell him, you know. Maybe he just doesn't think about the things I might want, and I don't know what's worse.
And
frankly, the sex is mediocre at best, which is just disappointing, really, because I sort of expected... Well, you know, at this point, I'm starting to wonder if he's just gay.
It's at this point that Draco is also starting to wonder if this bloke is gay, and the temptation to lean back and tell this woman that she's probably right is almost too strong to resist. Then.
Which would be something, wouldn't it? Merlin, the press would have a field day if the saviour of the wizarding world was gay. Could you imagine?
She says, snorting.
I can't believe Harry Potter is that bad,
says the other woman. Well, Draco briefly has an out-of-body experience.
You'd think he'd be a better boyfriend, but Merlin, that's dreadful. Why are you even still with him at this point? Well, I mean, it's Harry Potter,
is Incredulous' response.
Do you know how many people would murder to have a chance with him? I knew I scored the moment he stumbled through awkwardly asking me on a date.
Doesn't sound like you did, love.
Regardless of everything else, he's still Harry Potter. You should see the looks I get at work when I mention he's my boyfriend. Pure fucking awe, I tell you. I got a bloody promotion. Not sure that's a good reason to stay with someone you're clearly incompatible with. Especially if he's a complete nutter. No, I can make it work. I'm making it work.
Draco stands up very abruptly, unblinking as he throws galleons on the table, despite the fact that he hasn't even gotten his order yet. It hardly registers to him, because he's already moving, making his way right out the door without looking back. It's not until Draco's standing on Harry Potter's doorstep that he stops to consider how absolutely insane it was to come straight here without a thought in his head. What's he thinking, showing up like this, to do what exactly? Save Harry from his relationship? Fancy that, Draco being the saviour for once. Ha! Harry would sooner blossom off his doorstep than believe him. Draco stands in place, staring blankly at the doorbell, having absolutely no fucking clue where to go from here, except he also can't make himself leave. He's really taking this personally, because he's the one who's supposed to be slandering Harry left and right, not the people in his life who are supposed to love him. Although, Draco hasn't slandered Harry in just about 6 years or so, at least not out loud. His constant litany of insults that sort of always float in the back of his mind remain firmly in his head these days. That's what those in the business call growth. What business, Draco can't say, but he's sure that they do. Finally, after too long of doing nothing, Draco releases a mental fuck it and reaches out to press the doorbell. The good thing about where Harry lives is that it's right in the middle of Muggles, which has always baffled Draco a bit, because he really can't understand why the Black Ancestral Home would be around Muggles at all, given the general history of them. But it likely comes in handy for Harry now. Due to the proximity of the Muggles, reporters and the like can't hound him constantly, and it surely helps that so few people actually know this is where Harry lives. Draco knows, because what doesn't he know about Harry, really? But also, his mother mentioned it once, and that information was filed away in the back of his mind with all the insults. When the door swings open, there's Harry in all his horrible, lacklustre glory, still sporting a head of unkempt hair and those stupid circular glasses of his. Green eyes, annoyingly striking as ever, wearing pyjamas in the middle of the afternoon, like the plebeian he's always been. Scar paler than his brown skin, scattered over his forehead like fractured glass, just like usual. The mere sight of him makes Rick's stomach cramp. From disgust, obviously. Harry stares at him blankly for a moment, then gives a very violent blink, as if he's struggling to process the fact that Draco is standing at his door, which is fair. Draco is too. It's not like they've not seen each other since... Well, the last time they actually spoke to each other was at Draco's trial, when Harry spoke on his behalf to help reduce his sentence and returned his wand to him. They even shook hands afterwards, as if they were pretending to be adults finalising a business deal. To this day, that memory still doesn't feel real. However, they have caught glimpses of one another over the years, usually in passing, or across the room at various charity functions and the like. A glimpse is really all they get, because they've repeatedly, without fail, looked away from each other and went well out of their way to avoid stealing another. They never speak at these functions, or in any other capacity either. So, while the sight of Harry isn't that jarring, his voice when he blurts out, "Malfoy," very much is. Because it's changed since he was 18. It's certainly deeper now. "Potter," Draco replies, then doesn't say anything else, because his mind is unfortunately blank. What the fuck is he supposed to say?
"Sorry to bother, but you need to break up with your girlfriend."
Yeah, that'll go over well.
"Can I?"
Harry trails off, grimacing slightly, obviously in no mood to help anyone. Or maybe just Draco specifically, which is rude and not saviour-like of him at all.
"Why are you here?"
There are three rules in life that Draco Malfoy lives by. 1, you alone are responsible for the trajectory of your life. 2, never lay a scarf of two opposing prints. 3, when in doubt, go at everything with confidence, because you may not have your shit together, but as long as no one else realises that, you're in control. Rule 1 and 2 don't necessarily apply here and now. Well, they always apply, or else they wouldn't be worth living by. But Rule 3 has gotten Draco through worse situations than this, and it hasn't failed him thus far. So that's what he goes with now.
"Oh, I just thought I'd pop by,"
Draco says casually, lifting his hands to start lazily pulling his gloves off, one finger at a time. The motion draws Harry's bewildered gaze, which gives Draco the opportunity to move forward and brush right past him, walking into the house like he owns it. Been a while since we've seen each other, hasn't it? Love what you've done with the place, by the way.
What?
Harry says, still standing in the doorway, craning his head back to look at Draco in pure disbelief, as if it's unfathomable to him that Draco's in his house. Again, fair. It is to Draco too.
Your house? Draco flicks his fingers around pointedly, arching an eyebrow. It's lovely. From what my mother told me of it, I was expecting something much worse.
It used to be. I cleaned it up.
Harry blinks, then frowns, and repeats,
What?
I heard I have distant ancestors here. Is that right?
Draco asks idly, moving further down the front hall, peering around curiously. He heard terrible things about this place, especially what happened to it during the war. But it's not dark, and it doesn't smell of death. In fact, the front hall is bright and airy. The space opened up, smelling very clean. The chandelier is a nice touch, sparkling like dripping black diamonds. The walls are all a seafoam green with thin gold lines splattered all across from ceiling to floor.
Ancestors? Harry asks.
He's still standing at the door, leaving it wide open. He clearly still hasn't come to terms with Draco being inside yet, so Draco gives him more time.
Yes, portraits of my ancestors, Draco explains, finally plucking his last glove off and carefully tucking them in his coat pocket.
Yeah, they used to be, but I got rid of them all. Hard to do with the sticking charms and all. But Sirius never liked them, so I thought... Well, anyway, they were all vile, and I didn't want them in my house.
Ah, I see. Sirius, your godfather, if I recall.
Harry's eyes narrow.
He was, yes.
Never offered you proper condolences for that, did I?
You're about 9 years late.
Draco hums.
Better late than never. Condolences.
Thanks, Harry says flatly,
then gives a very sharp gesture to the open door.
If that was all...
It wasn't, Draco replies,
then pivots on his heel and sweeps further inside, ignoring the sound of Harry's garbled disbelief from behind him as he strolls along. The further Draco goes in, the more he can tell that this house has been well taken care of. No dirt, no dust, no filth at all. No signs of dark magic either, which comes as no surprise. He's pretty sure dark magic of any sort scampers to find holes to hide in the moment perfect, pure Harry Potter comes within range. There is, however, a fresher feeling to the place. Like all the paint hasn't had time to fade. A new coat to hide something underneath. There are quite a few paintings that Draco recognises as Luna Lovegood's. Some of them downright chilling, because they're haunting glimpses of a war no one sane would want to be reminded of. So maybe the girlfriend had it right, and Harry actually is a complete nutter. Thankfully, there are just as many, if not more, paintings that are brighter, happier, and full of colour. Some of them move, but most don't, which is intriguing. The house seems held together with a nice theme, one that Draco finds especially on the nose, as well as mildly amusing. Most of the furniture you can see is black, no doubt a homage to the original owners of the house, or maybe Sirius specifically. But it's all offset with gentle hues of blue and green, something soft to see everywhere Draco looks, right out the corner of his eye. It screams of comfort, like one's meant to feel at home here. Being that this is Harry's home, that makes sense. But Draco can't deny that it's very well done. Not as luxurious or opulent as he's used to, but still tasteful.
Malfoy,
Harry snaps, marching up the hall to catch up to Draco as he pushes his way into another room.
You can't just...
Oh, well done, Potter,
Draco interrupts with honest approval, his eyebrows flying up.
I wasn't expecting this at all. Very nice.
What?
Harry sputters, stunned.
Your dining room. It's very nice.
Thank you. I don't... What?
Draco circles a large table in the centre of the dining room, appraising it, almost certain it's made of dogwood, just from the shade and grain. There's a big bay window towards the back, overlooking a garden that has seen better days. Overgrown and exceedingly green, like someone brought it back to life without knowing that it still needed to be maintained. Better than it being dead, at least. The curtains are open, letting in light and warmth, making the room feel bigger, more breathable.
There's a door that leads into the kitchen, which Draco lets himself into without asking. Pleasantly surprised once again. Everything is exceptionally organised. All the hanging utensils polished and clean. The spice rack nearly overflowing. And a kettle along with a tray for tea readily within reach. Draco nods as he looks around at everything. Taking in the theme of this room. Different from those he's seen so far. Everything diluted teal and white with silver accents. It's a bit like capturing the most gentle sea and calmly draping it over everything. Once again geared towards comfort, but still tastefully done.
Your kitchen is beautiful, Draco announces, swiveling on the spot to face Harry, who is scrubbing a hand over his messy hair in obvious frustration.
Draco tactfully ignores that.
I imagine your house elf loves it. Where is he, by the way? I vaguely remember hearing about him. Creature, wasn't it?
Yes, Harry says shortly. He's not here. He passed away a couple of years ago now.
Draco resists the urge to wince.
Ah, condolences?
Harry just stares at him blankly. So Draco coughs and straightens up.
Well, I doubt you have replaced him being the loyal sort that you are. So it's on us to make tea. Will you be doing that, or shall I?
Tea? Harry looks so confused. It's almost funny.
What? Me, then,
Draco says decisively. Nodding and drawing out his wand to flick it towards the kettle. It immediately flies into action, and Draco swivels to hunt down tea while things move all around him. He's pleasantly surprised to find a whole selection of tea, up to and including genuine tea leaves in their purest form, which admittedly gets Draco a little excited.
You're making tea? In my house?
Harry states this in a tone that suggests it's unequivocally incomprehensible to him.
Yes, but...
But?
It's Tuesday. What's that got to do with anything?
Draco glances back with his eyebrows raised.
Do you not drink tea on Tuesdays?
Harry's eyebrows are practically stitched together.
No, I do. Just, it's Tuesday. You're in my house, making tea, and it's Tuesday.
Yes.
What?
Draco turns around to hide how he rolls his eyes, as if his brain isn't also imploding a little bit, just from the sheer ridiculousness of the circumstances. However, he is confident and in control, so he continues to steep the tea, moving around in the kitchen as if he's been in it many times, which he most certainly hasn't. Harry thankfully doesn't interrupt, or ask useless questions again, possibly needing more time to process or adjust. Draco appreciates the quiet, since it gives him more space to think about how exactly he's going to handle the whole girlfriend matter, considering that's the whole point. Really, it's for Harry's own good. Once the tea is officially done, smelling positively divine, by the way, Draco flicks his wand again to set up the tray with two cups, two spoons, and the glass container of sugar in the shape of a cored-up snake, which Draco finds rather hilarious. He doesn't laugh out loud, fortunately, but it gives him a wry sense of mirth deep down inside, because surely there's countless things it could remind Harry of, including the Dark Lord's pet snake. But Draco can't help but wonder if it reminds him of Slytherin's, maybe even one in particular. That'd be hysterical, wouldn't it? Draco turns around to find Harry watching him, as if he's grown a second head. Clearly still finding Draco's presence difficult to come to terms with. Yes, well, he's always been a bit thick, if memory serves, so Draco's not sure what he was expecting.
Come, let's have tea,
Draco says, flicking his wand at the tray to get it to float after him, as he once again brushes past Harry to slip back through the door. Harry's gaze is as piercing as it's always been, locking right on him as he goes by.
Malfoy, you're not here to try and buy my house, are you?
Harry asks once he follows him out, frowning as Draco settles in at the table.
Because if you are, well, you can't. It's not for sale. It's a lovely house, but no, Potter, I've no interest in purchasing it,
Draco assures him, gesturing to the seat across from him.
Sit.
Harry does, with no small amount of suspicion.
All right. If it's not that, what do you want? Why you're here? I told you. I just thought I'd pop by. Catch up.
Catch up. In retrospect, maybe that wasn't the best thing to say, given their history. Draco carries on with confidence anyway, just to remain in control.
Yes, precisely. Tell me, how have you been?
Excellent, Harry answers tonelessly. Now what do you want?
Well, you certainly don't seem excellent.
Draco says, scooping sugar to stir it in his tea.
soothed by the familiar clink of the spoon against ceramic. In fact, I'd say you look rather unhappy.
Goodness, I wonder why,
is Harry's scathing response.
And really, Draco forgot just how annoying he could be.
Couldn't possibly tell you.
Draco shrugs innocently, because he can be annoying too. Can't outdo the doer, as that saying goes. He thinks he was born to get under Harry's skin, and he's clearly excelling at it if Harry's clenched jaws and anything to go by.
I probably could if I knew what was going on in your life. How's being an aura?
It's...
Harry heaves a sigh, something weary flashing in his eyes. And oh, well, Draco didn't actually think Harry was unhappy because of his job, but he stands corrected.
Enjoy it.
I'm good at it.
That's not what I asked, Draco says.
Harry glares at him, nostrils flared and snaps.
I don't actually care what you ask, Malfoy. It's my job.
Right, Draco mutters,
knowing a delicate topic when he sees one. He always has, but years ago, he wouldn't have cared about that. Not with Harry. Look at that, more growth.
Never mind, I'm sure you're very successful in your career. How are your friends, then? Weasley and Granger get married yet? Would have thought it'd be splashed across all the papers for months if they had.
No.
Oh? No children either?
No.
They didn't work out?
Yes.
They did?
Yes.
Right. What about you? I mean, everyone heard about your split with the youngest Weasley, but nothing else since.
You're asking me about my dating life, Harry states,
his voice entirely devoid of emotion. Draco takes a sip of his tea, clears his throat, then says,
sure.
Get out,
Harry says, very firmly.
I beg your pardon. Get out of my house. Leave, Malfoy, now. I don't know how or why you decided to sell information to the Prophet, but you're not about to come into my house, drink my tea, and what?
Now it's Draco's turn to do some rapid blinking, officially the bewildered one.
I'm not selling anything to anyone.
Harry gives him a cold look.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time, would it? You and Rita still on friendly terms, I take it?
What?
Okay, now Draco's just offended.
Excuse you, Potter. I have you know I don't need to sell anything, and I never did. I am more than financially comfortable, as I've always been, so the only reason I ever even entertained Skeeter was to...
Harry crooks an eyebrow. Due to that eyebrow, Draco has no choice but to commit. Still incapable of backing down from a challenge when it's issued by Harry, it seems.
I only ever did it to slander you.
Which you have no intention of doing again, I'm sure.
Oh, no. I don't have it in me to ever pass up the opportunity to do that. But I'm mature enough to only do it to your face now. Besides, have you been living under a rock? I'll be laughed out of any room I walked into whilst insulting you.
Both of Harry's eyebrows go up.
Would you?
Death Eater,
Draco reminds him glibly, pointing at himself. Then he points at Harry.
Dark Lord Slayer.
No one calls me that.
Shame. It's terribly funny.
It isn't, Harry mutters. Like it all.
Draco ignores him. Awful sense of humour, this one.
Anyway, my point is, even if I wanted to go spreading your business to the press or anyone else, which I don't, I wouldn't get very far.
So what do you want? Harry quits out. You're my house, drinking tea. On a Tuesday, and
asking questions. Why?
Just making conversation, Draco says lightly.
Why don't you drink tea and answer me, hmm? It's been ages, hasn't it, since we last spoke? Go on, Potter. Indulge me for old time's sake.
We've literally never done this ever in our lives. There is no old time's sake, Malfoy.
Yes, well, first time for everything. So, single? Girlfriend?
Harry stares at him like he sprouted a third head in addition to a second. Blatantly perplexed, but Draco simply blinks at him and sips his tea. Finally, after the silence stretches to uncomfortable lengths, Harry blows out a deep sigh, shoulders slumping, and seems to just resign himself to it. In a mumble, he emits,
Girlfriend.
Been together long?
A couple of months.
Going well?
Draco asks casually. Then he watches him closely.
It's... yeah.
Harry does an odd little wiggle of his shoulders.
not quite a shrug, but a motion that seems to suggest the opposite of a shrug altogether. Yeah, sure.
Draco watches Harry make his tea, counting each absent-minded spoonful of sugar. A total of 3, which is 2 less than he used to have back in Hogwarts, which Draco didn't realise he knew until this exact moment. But,
well, what doesn't he know about Harry, right?
Potter, you don't sound too sure.
I'm sure, is Harry's defiant reply, terribly predictable of him.
Right.
Draco watches him drink.
Tell me about her.
Tell you about my girlfriend.
If you like.
If I don't,
then maybe it's not going so well, is it?
Harry scowls at him.
It's fine. She's fine. Iris is perfectly fine. She works in the ministry and has a cat.
Wow, Draco draws. Informative.
Fuck off, Harry snaps. I don't know where you get the idea. You can just show up and start criticising my life, but...
Draco realises all at once that he's made a horrendous mistake, because he's gone about this in the worst possible way. But again, with confidence and control, he can salvage this. So cuts in and presses on with,
No, of course, you're right. Rather rude of me to ask so much of you and offer nothing of myself.
What? Harry asks, baffled again.
I'm single. People don't make it a habit to fall in love with Death Eaters these days, which is rather inconvenient for me,
Draco says lightly.
I'm well off in my career, though, because what I do is fairly covert. A repairman of magical artefacts of all kinds. My clients don't ever have to specify who repaired their things, and they often don't have to interact with me very much. Some can even send in their requests and payment by owl. I don't technically need the money, but I do prefer to keep busy, and ensures I have some connections, at least.
Harry blinks at him.
Repairman.
Rather good at it too, if I do say so myself. Don't take my word for it, though. I've plenty of proof.
Like the cabinet.
Draco frowns.
Which one? I've repaired many.
The first, Harry cuts in, holding his gaze. 6-year, room of requirement. Vanishing cabinet.
Oh yes, I suppose, but that's not my best work.
Draco replies lazily, waving his hand.
I have used it as a reference, though.
You would be surprised at the amount of people impressed, despite what it was used for afterwards.
Harry snorts.
Trust me, I really wouldn't.
Don't look at me like that. Regardless of its use at the end of the year, I worked really hard on learning how to do it.
Made a career out of it, even.
Found a passion for it, actually. I've no shame in my work, Potter, so spare me the judgment. I'm proud of what I do. And whether you believe it or not, I've actually helped people.
How?
Draco hums around another swallow of his tea, then says,
Haven't you ever had something important to you that was broken? I mean, very important. Something you can't imagine parting with. Maybe a gift from someone you love, or just anything, really. There are a lot of people who have things like that. Heirlooms passed down from family members. Gifts from spouses or friends, dead or alive. And when they fall into a state of despair, I fix them. Doesn't seem like something that mattered, but it really does.
You fix anything? Harry asks carefully.
A certain edge to his tone that Draco has heard many times.
What is it?
Draco responds, lips twitching.
What's broken?
Harry seems to struggle to meet his eyes.
There was, before the war, the Weasley had this clock. It's not worked since the war. We think maybe it stopped when Fred died. But I just think Mrs. Weasley would appreciate it if...
I'd have to examine it, Draco says softly.
Far softer than he's ever been with Harry. But it's easy to slip into his work voice, that very specific tone catered to be comforting.
I'll only need to once, and then I could tell you if it's salvageable. If it is, I'll fix it.
Okay.
Harry nods, his gaze distant.
I'll have to talk to Ron. Probably Mrs. Weasley. But I suppose I'll send you an owl depending what they say. How much will it be?
Draco huffs a laugh.
For you, 3.
That was not at all what I was expecting you to say.
No. I thought you'd be used to hearing that, being the Dark Lord Slayer and all. Surely you get things for free all the time. Yeah, but I never ask for it, Harry says grudgingly. I don't want it. Just tell me how much. How about this?
Draco raises his eyebrows.
I'll appraise it and let you know the usual price. And then you can toss that money at a charity or to someone who actually needs it. Hmm?
Harry purses his lips.
Wasn't it where you knew what altruism was, Malfoy?
It's not altruism. Truth is, I don't care to try and stop with the guilt I surely feel if I made you or the Weasleys pay for it. Very inconvenient, that guilt. I go out of my way to avoid it.
So, what? You do good things to feel better about yourself?
Doesn't everyone?
No. Some people do good things because it feels good to do good.
Draco stares at him.
We just said the same exact thing.
We didn't, Harry argues, but he's frowning like he's not entirely sure.
I just mean, doing the right thing because it's right is better than doing it because...
What? Draco challenges, amused.
Better to do it because it's right, as opposed to doing it because it's not wrong. Please enlighten me what the difference is.
You're the difference, is Harry's answer.
Yes, well, Draco murmurs. Doesn't it matter more that the right thing is getting done at all?
Harry frowns, then heaves a sigh and shakes his head.
Draco Malfoy is in my house. We're having tea along with ethical debates, and it's Tuesday. How is this my life?
Draco arches an eyebrow.
You sound so surprised.
Shouldn't I be?
Considering your life?
Harry blinks, then says, wryly,
you know, fair point.
So Draco may have miscalculated just a bit. In all his confidence, he might have forgotten that Harry is not weak-willed or the type to back down, so steamrolling over him isn't very simple. This means that Draco doesn't achieve a way to warn Harry about his girlfriend. But as established from the tender age of 14, Draco is very dedicated and has an eye for detail. That means he comes up with a foolproof plan, of which we'll need confidence to see through. Fortunately, Draco has plenty of that. The plan is rather simple, because Draco has learned by now that most plans are better that way. Complex details and frivolity in the mix just makes things too complicated. No, it's for the best to have a proper outline of what needs to be done, and the best way to do it. Draco's only option is waiting for the opportunity to bring it up once Harry is comfortable enough with him to not immediately suspect some sort of foul play. After becoming someone in Harry's life that at least trusts enough to listen when Draco explains the situation, which will require a lot of proximity over a long period of time. A sacrifice Draco is willing to make. Harry's letter arrives 3 days after the initial reunion, and Draco wastes no time in showing up on his doorstep again. He falters only for a moment when it's Ron Weasley who opens the door. Standing there in the frame, arms crossed, unreasonably tall as he's always been. He's certainly grown into himself, though. Now sporting over a handsome layer of facial hair the colour of rust, and no longer as lanky as he once was. Rather muscular, in fact. Which is a bit brutal to come to terms with. Because Draco never in his life imagined that he'd find Ronald Weasley attractive. And yet here they are. In other news, Ron's glare hasn't changed a bit.
Malfoy,
Ron says. Not even really a greeting. More of an accusation or a shameless warning.
Weasley,
Draco replies. And then he bows on with confidence, refusing to lose control of this before it even begins.
My, you certainly turned out dapper, haven't you? Quite the handsome fellow you've become. Mind taking my coat?
Ron blinks rapidly, like he's struggling to make sense of the words that just came out of Draco's mouth. But as soon as he starts to, his face turns an unfortunate shade of red. He's caught so off guard that he doesn't even move or protest as Draco slips out of his coat and pushes it into his hands, simultaneously brushing right past him to enter the house, peering around for Harry.
What?
Is Ron's belated baffled response.
Where's Potter?
Oi, what?
Potter? He's here, surely. It's his house,
Draco says, turning to look at Ron with his eyebrows raised.
I'm supposed to be meeting with him today. I'm sure you know why.
Yeah, he's, I don't know, changing again. Already done it like 5 times.
Ron rolls his eyes, then blinks again, then frowns up Draco and repeats.
What?
Are you coming with us then?
Draco asks,
might be for the best, since you'll know the history of the clock better than Potter will, I suspect. How long has it been in your family?
Ron opens his mouth, closes it, and his face squinches up a little bit.
Actually, I don't. I'm not sure. I know it's been around as long as I can remember, and Bill mentioned helping add Percy's hand to it once, so it came before me. I reckon Mum or Dad had it made when Bill came along. Makes sense, considering that was during the First War, so it's probably comforting to have.
What's its function?
Tracking? I mean, it sort of keeps an update on where everyone in the family is.
Everyone in the family? Or just you, your siblings and your parents?
Yeah, just us.
Draco nods, lips tipping down.
Potter said it quit working after the war. The second one, I mean. He didn't give much detail.
Yeah, it...
Ron stops, mouth twisting a little bit.
After the battle, when we all went home, Mum found out all the hands had fallen off. She tried putting them back up, even Fred's, but nothing would make them stay. Hermione said maybe it worked without Fred's on it, but no one wants it without him on there. If you're going to fix it, Fred stays, or else it's not really fixed.
I understand, Draco says simply.
Because believe it or not, he actually does.
Ron may not think so, but Draco doesn't particularly need him to, or care if he does or not. I imagine the clock is tied to the entire family's magic, is that right?
Ron clears his throat.
Hermione says so. She looked at it a few times, but even brilliant as she is, she couldn't work out what the issue was, other than...
Fred, Draco fills in. Not that he's an issue, but his death could explain why the clock stopped working, particularly if it impacted the family as a whole, which I imagine it did. Magic is very responsive. And if it was something each of you were feeling...
Grief, you mean?
Yes.
Then yeah, it's probably that,
Ron mumbles.
It'd explain why it's still broken even now. Grief never goes away.
Draco inclines his head in silent agreement, then swivels his head when he hears footsteps in the hall. Harry is tugging at the bottom of his coat with a frown, an oversized one with a hole in the collar, and with him is none other than Hermione Granger, who is muttering to him while he nods along, blatantly not listening to a word she says. His hair's a wreck, but when isn't it? Hermione hasn't undergone a huge change like Ron, though she is a bit taller than she was back in school. Her hair's still as wild as ever, tumbling all around her head in tight curls that don't, and never did look bad, the way Draco used to mock her for, and she dresses as simply as she always has. Her eyes are sharp just the way they used to be, practically dissecting him with her gaze the moment she looks up and spots him. Hermione has uncanny ability to make him feel like he's been issued a test he's not studied for, and will inevitably fail. It's unnerving every single time. Nonetheless, out of everyone present at the moment, Hermione's the one he's spoken to the most. And in a wild turn of events that likely none of them could have predicted, she's who he's actually most comfortable with. So he nods and greets.
Granger, hello. A pleasure to see you, as always.
I'm sure, is Hermione's wry response. A habitual one that she's given nearly every time he's greeted her at all. It hasn't been that often, as they don't go out of their way to interact. But when it comes to getting money for charities and rebuilding committees, she knows precisely where to get it and how, and has no shame in seeking Draco out to make the request. She certainly has no issue with Draco's habit of avoiding guilt, let alone exploiting it when it suits those in need. And frankly, Draco is grateful for it, because it means he doesn't have to seek out ways to do it on his own.
I can't believe you never told me Weasley turned out so handsome, Draco mutters, clicking his tongue. Quite the plot twist, that, but my eyes are not complaining.
Hermione arches an eyebrow as Ron sputters from off to the side, no doubt flushing again.
I wasn't aware we were on the sort of speaking terms where I could tell you about it.
You didn't want to rub it in? Not even a little?
No, Draco, some of us are mature.
Draco sighs.
How terribly dull. It was a pleasant surprise in any case. Well done on the arm candy, Granger. You earned it.
I did, didn't I?
Hermione asks, grinning with a glint in her eye. Then she blinks, frowns, and says,
What?
I told you, Harry hisses. Talking about me, Potter?
Draco raises his eyebrows at the agitated idiot in question.
What do you say?
Harry purses his lips. Just told her that you say weird shit.
I haven't the faintest what you mean, Draco says confidently. Is it my impeccable sense of humour? Always surprises people, but I really couldn't tell you why.
What?
Harry's face scrunches up. Then he looks over to Hermione, strange.
Do you see? Didn't I say?
Hermione flaps her hand, looking weary.
Yes, yes, you said, many times. Please spare me from anything more. Ron and I have already been through this once. We're not doing it again.
Harry tosses up his hands with a huff.
Anyway, best be off. Molly's expecting us to...
Hermione blinks again, head tilting.
Ron, what on earth are you holding?
Ah, yes, thank you,
Draco says, reaching out to take his coat from Ron's hands. He jolts like he's forgotten that he's holding it. His face goes red again.
I take it we're apparating?
Yeah, come on, you'll slide along with me, Harry grumbles,
jerking his head towards the door. A silent command to follow, which Draco fights the impulse to resist, simply because it's coming from him. And unlike Hermione, he's not that mature.
He's just mature enough, however, to follow Harry out onto the front step, the other two gathering their own coats and muttering to one another as the door closes, muffling their voices even further.
Harry looks over at Malfoy. His features shifted down, somehow, like he's displeased, like his general unhappiness is dragging at him. It's really quite familiar to how he looked back in fifth year, except aged, though the way Draco sort of wants to reach out and poke him hasn't changed in the least. He considers doing it for a moment, then concludes they're not quite there yet, and doesn't fancy losing a finger today. Shame. It would have been funny.
Are we going?
Draco asks, when Harry's stupid emerald eyes have pierced through him for long enough.
Yes, just...
Harry's eyes narrow, then he huffs.
Look, don't be rude to Molly. I'll kill you.
How?
What?
Draco tilts his head.
How will you kill me? With your wand? Your hands? Creatively? Will there be a mess?
Harry stares at him, then mutters,
there's something deeply wrong with you, I think.
Potter, if you're going to make threats, you have to give them weight.
Draco rolls his eyes. He can't believe Harry doesn't know this. Out of the two of them, Harry's the actual murderer here, which is just a fact. A perfectly acceptable murder in self-defense, sure, but a murder all the same.
You can't just say you'll kill me, then not be able to make it believable.
Are you lecturing me how to be more threatening?
You? I'm plenty threatening.
In what world?
I'm a Death Eater. Very dangerous.
I've seen you crying to a ghost in a girl's loo, Malfoy. You'll excuse me for not trembling from fear.
Not my best moment, I'll admit. But that's an unfair measurement of my threat levels.
Actually, you're an unfair measurement.
Being a Dark Lord Slayer and all. Which means Death Eaters hardly even register you. But to other people, I'm terrifying.
Harry snorts.
Why do you sound so proud of that?
It's better than being seen as pathetic, which is what people think if they're not terrified.
Draco explains lazily.
Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, to make a proper threat, you need to be able to answer the questions I've asked, even though obviously you wouldn't actually kill me.
No, but I would, though.
Harry cuts in, staring right at him without blinking.
If you upset Molly, I'll have to.
Draco stares at him, mouth running dry. Harry doesn't look like he's joking, and his eyes are so fucking green. Draco hates them. He's hated them forever.
You know, Potter, that was really well done, actually. Very, intimidating. Maybe you don't need to be able to answer the questions after all. You seem well-equipped to make threats on your own. So, yes, good, well done.
Harry's mouth twitches, then grows into a full grin, and his eyes somehow get greener, the bastard. He holds out his arm in a clear offering, eyes fucking sparkling.
Lovely. Ready to go?
Draco isn't entirely sure that he is, which is a slip of control he doesn't at all appreciate. So he pretends he is ready, confidently taking Harry's arm and saying,
yes, thank you.
They twist away with a sharp crack.
You know, I used to assume you Weasleys lived in something the size of a rune shed. But this is actually bigger than I originally thought,
Draco says, as he idly peers around.
Merlin, I was terribly misguided back in school.
You don't say,
Ron mutters flatly.
I was also very imaginative,
Draco muses, clicking his tongue and shaking his head.
As if magic couldn't stitch together more space for all of you. And really, it's some good stitching. Smells like honey and biscuits in here. What is that? Whatever it is, I'd like to bottle it or bathe in it or, I don't know, eat it? No, seriously, what is that? I want it. Can I buy it?
That'd be the muffins I just took out of the oven,
Molly Weasley states as she sweeps out of the kitchen, more of that delicious scent wafting out after her.
They're not for sale, no, and no one's getting any before they cool. Harry, I can see you.
Harry freezes in place, swiveling around from where he's about to sneak into the kitchen. He smiles sheepishly.
Sorry, Mrs. Weasley. They do smell really lovely.
Molly clicks her tongue gently and looks him over.
Are you eating well, dear? You're thinner than I last saw you. And what's that all about, hmm? Over a month now since you stopped by.
Mom, even B. Ron cuts in quickly. If you go scolding him, he might not turn back up at all.
Ron!
Hermione says, reaching up to cover her face. Harry is frowning.
What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing,
Ron replies, just as quickly as before.
Nothing all, mate. Just getting Mum off your back.
Is that so?
Molly asks severely, staring him down. Ron claps his hands together.
Anyway, Malfoy's here. He's going to praise the clock, Mum. Have you got it?
Oh, yes, right,
Molly mumbles, a bustle of motion as she sweeps around the room, muttering under her breath. Ron and Hermione seem to be having a conversation with their eyes, while Harry's gazing wistfully towards the kitchen. Draco, in the interim, peers around the house with curiosity, because there's seemingly something new to see everywhere he looks. The clutter isn't tasteful at all, and the sheer amount of colour and activity is more gaudy than elegant. But the house is very, very warm. As in the atmosphere, not the temperature. It feels like a home in the exact opposite way of the manor. No open spaces to get lost in. Everything's sort of swaddled and comforting. He can't say he likes it, as far as what he'd want to live in. But he can't deny there's a certain charm to the place. Really foolish of him to go insulting it all those years ago when he'd never been in it. Because he truly hates disagreeing with himself, or being wrong. Despite the fact that it goes without saying, he's regrettably gotten used to the feeling. But even so, it's not like he could have expected to come here and be proven wrong, is it? Hindsight helps no one.
Mrs. Weasley, do you reckon the muffins have cooled enough now?
Harry asks, inching towards the kitchen again.
Hmm? Oh, yes, dear, that's fine,
says Molly, who's digging through a large box with a lid, clearly unaware what she's agreeing to in her distraction, which Harry takes advantage of immediately to slip into the kitchen. Rather sliver of him, really. As soon as the kitchen door shuts, Hermione is swiveling to look at Ron incredulously.
He might not turn back up at all. Really, Ron, what did we talk about? I didn't mean how it sounded,
Ron groans. You know, I'm just worried. I don't want him to, you know.
Insinuating that he'd be scared off is only going to anger him.
I'd rather him be angry than how he was last time.
Ron,
Hermione says, face softening.
It's been years.
Ron nods sharply.
I know, but it seems similar, doesn't it? Like he's just retreating again. Closing himself off. Self-imposed isolation. Next thing we know, he'll stop letting us come over.
You're fretting.
Yes, and I appreciate your support. Come on, Hermione. It's usually you, isn't it? How are you so calm?
Hermione heaves a sigh, lips curling up.
I can't be entirely sure, but I don't think it's like last time. Have you noticed? He still comes when Jin's not here.
Oh.
Ron blinks.
You don't think he's...
Honestly, I don't know what to think, Hermione admits, but I'm not thinking the worst.
You could just ask him,
Draco suggests, which makes Hermione and Ron jot in place and swivel to stare at him, as if they'd forgotten he was there. Considering how bewildering it is that he is here... He doesn't take this personally.
Potter, I mean. He's not coming around here as often, right? That's what it sounds like. Have you considered just asking him why?
Ron and Hermione continue to stare at him, which is rather disappointing, because it'd be helpful if they knew it was the girlfriend's fault Harry wasn't around as often. And no, she has no right, because it's blatantly obvious that this is Harry's family. To ask him to stay away simply because he used to date the youngest member... 5 years ago. It's just absurd. It's also a bit cruel, considering he's severely lacking in family already. Harry's two best friends would see this as a bad sign that it is, and be much more successful in getting him to break up with her, for sure, so Draco's tempted to simply tell them and let them handle the whole mess. He doesn't for two reasons. One, he's positive they wouldn't actually believe him anyway. They think he was trying to sabotage Harry's relationship, which, to be fair, he is, but not his overall happiness, and that has to count for something. It's that he doubts they'll see it that way. Two, a selfish part of Draco wants to handle it on his own, using his many wits and unfaltering confidence to do the good thing, because it'll make him feel better about himself. Besides, this is how he prefers to spend his time.
Ah, there we are,
Molly pops up, beaming as she swivels on the spot to come bustling back over to the table.
Found it, finally. It's not usually this small. We used to keep it hung on the wall, but I took to shrinking it a bit to carry it around with me during the war, so I could look at it and, well, you know.
Right, of course, Draco murmurs, purposely gentling his voice, like she's just another client, despite the gnawing clench in his chest and stomach. Guilt and compassion he prefers to avoid going to war within. He watches as Molly gingerly lays out the clock, small enough to fit in a hand, and all the shrugging hands of it. Tiny varnished metals with oval ends, flattened with faded photos of the Weasley children in the centre. The metalwork is impressive, each of the names etched along the line of them. I'll have to see it at its proper size to appraise it correctly.
Oh yes, that's fine,
Molly assures him, flicking her wand gingerly of the pieces, which will return to the original size.
It's lovely, Draco tells her,
leaning in to scan the details, the rest of the room around him melting away.
Brilliant carving of the wood, fine details in the metal. And I don't doubt the mechanism is intricately crafted. I'll need to run diagnostics, both magical and mechanical, if that's all right.
Yes, that's all right,
Molly murmurs, wringing her hands. Draco can feel her gaze on him, but he's used to that in situations such as these, when the client is desperate, when what's broken really means something to them. He doesn't let it bother him like he once did when he first started out, though he will always prefer working without an audience, especially one that cares too much. In silence, Draco pulls out his wand to get a look, eyebrows furrowed as if the strains of magic come to life in wisps, thin white lines connected from the hands to the centre of the clock. He eases the face of the clock open, studying the gears, testing them for any blocks. He picks up each hand, turning them at all angles to wave his wand over them, checking the pieces themselves and the magic clinging to it. He can no longer feel any eyes on him now, despite knowing Hermione and want to join Molly in staring, waiting with a bated breath, hoping to hear good news. The thing is, Draco tends to get lost in things like this. He stops asking for permission for everything he does, just handling all the parts as if they're his own, muttering under his breath and going through spell after spell. The usual process for appraising, really. However, he can tell when something has potential and when something is beyond fixing. This. I can fix it, Draco announces, which is quite possibly the stupidest thing he could have said, since he has no fucking idea how he's going to manage it.
You can,
Molly rasps, hand flying to her chest, eyes widening and almost immediately filling with tears.
Really?
Yes, Draco says, like an idiot. A stupid idiot with the confidence tipping over into arrogance, which is only going to get him into trouble, as it has many times. I'll need to take it with me and work on it. I can't give an exact timeline for how long it take, because from what I can tell, it'd be a project. But yes, I can fix it. Molly's fingers twitched against her chest, right under her throat, almost turning into claw for a moment as her breath stutters out of her.
With Fred still on there, Roy? He has to be on there, or it's not actually fixed. Can you do that?
Draco, the biggest idiot on the planet, nods, smiles with confidence and says, of course I can.
Oh, thank you.
Molly chokes out, then proceeds to throw herself at him so abruptly that he flinches. Not that she seems to notice, because she's a bit busy trying to squeeze all the air out of his lungs. He nearly topples out of the chair, and has never, in his life, felt so undignified, but is over almost as soon as it starts. She rips away from him, sniffling, and smoothing down the front of her apron.
Really, thank you. I'll get you the muffin, all of them. You can have all of them.
That's not necessary,
Draco says weakly. But Molly's already turning around, shakily wiping the tears off her cheeks. She sweeps off to go into the kitchen, and Draco sits very still, almost too afraid to move. What's he supposed to do now? How is he meant to come to grips with the fact that Ron's mother, who he has insulted many times in a variety of ways, has just hugged him? Can you actually fix it? That's Hermione. And when Draco slowly looks over, she's dissecting him with her gaze again. Because I tried many times, but I couldn't figure out how. Don't take it as an insult to your intelligence or talents, Draco mumbles. This sort of thing requires experience, and I've been doing it for years. If anyone can fix it, it's going to be me. Ron clears his throat and stands up, leaning forward across the table to offer his hand, holding Draco's gaze.
Thank you, Malfoy.
Maybe save the thanks for when I fixed it.
Just shake my bloody hand, would you?
Draco coughs and reaches out to do just that. When they break away, he says,
Nice hands, Weasley. Good for you, Granger.
Thanks,
Hermione says, while Ron turns red again.
Harry James Potter, you ate all the muffins!
Ron huffs a laugh and Draco nearly falls out of his chair, positively unprepared for such volume. He grins at Hermione, who wryly grins back.
Well, that'll scare him off, no doubt.
Surely not, Hermione says, amused.
Never has before.
Sorry, Mrs. Weasley, they were just really good.
Harry is chanting as he comes rushing out of the kitchen, biting his lip around a grin, mischief dancing in his eyes. It's quite possibly the happiest Draco has seen him look since, well, maybe ever.
I couldn't stop once I started. They were so good. It's a compliment to your culinary talents, really. Sorry.
Didn't even save any for me, mate,
Ron asks, wiggling his eyebrows.
He didn't. Ate them all, every single one,
Molly huffs as she follows Harry out, swatting him gently on the arm as she goes by, shaking her head. She looks at Draco, sighing.
Sorry, dear. I only made a few as it was, but well, when you bring that clock back to me, I'll give you a whole bundle, whatever you like.
It's fine, really, Draco mumbles. You don't have to do that.
I'm going to,
Molly tells him, rather stern about it, nearly unwilling to take no for an answer. Wisely, Draco just nods.
Come on, I should see you out, Harry says,
nodding at Draco and jerking his head towards the door.
Coming back, right, Harry?
Hermione checks, her tone light. None the wiser, Harry nods on his way to the door.
Yeah, won't be long at all. I'll get all the information from Malfoy about the clock. Keep a way to stay updated, or that, then I'll be back.
Draco gathers all the pieces of the clock, drawing out a pouch to shrink them and put them into, then offer quick nods to Molly and the other two before following Harry out. Once they reach the apparition point, Harry swivels with his eyebrows raised and asks,
All right, how much?
1,000 galleons,
Draco replies promptly. 1,000?
Harry chokes, his eyes bulging.
What? You've got to be joking. There's no way.
Draco's lip curl up.
You don't want to give 1,000 galleons to those in need, Potter? Not very altruistic of you. I don't know if I even have 1,000 galleons. You absolutely have 1,000 galleons.
Harry purses his lips.
I probably have at least 1,000 galleons. Sure, fine. I'll meet your price.
Really?
Draco's eyebrows fly up.
You'll actually agree to that? Because it was a joke, so you absolutely shouldn't agree to that. No, I'm going to,
Harry insists, locking eyes with Draco, refusing to back down.
1,000 galleons to those in need, done. I'll send you the proof by tomorrow.
Draco shakes his head in disbelief.
You're terrible at haggling, Potter. You know that. You have no concept of how rich people stay rich, do you? Not particularly, and I have no interest in learning. I don't actually care to be rich, Harry says. I just happen to be.
Could happen to anyone,
Draco muses, lazily waving a hand. Harry's lips twitch.
From my experience, yes. All one needs is a bunch of dead rich people to leave their money to them.
Rather useful, that.
Traumatising, though.
Draco hums.
Yes, well, you've got a variety of that in abundance. So really, being poor would probably have done you better.
You'll be surprised at the number of people who disagree, Harry tells him dryly. Money isn't everything, but it is helpful for those who really need it. So yes, 1,000 galleons is fine by me.
Potter, even 100 galleons is overpriced.
I don't care.
Doing good because it feels good,
Draco asks.
Harry hums. Now you're getting it.
Draco shrugs.
Suit yourself. I'll go now, if that's all.
Any updates I have on the clock, I'll be sure to let you know.
You're really going to fix it? Harry murmurs,
green eyes flitting around as he scans Draco's face.
Yes, Draco says softly. And then, I'm going to try.
Harry looks at him for a bit longer, visibly chewing on the inside of his lip. Then he clears his throat and reaches inside his coat to pull out something round, folded in a napkin. He holds it out to Draco without saying a word, but he doesn't blink. And his gaze is so unreasonably intense that it's almost hard to breathe. Mindlessly, as if bewitched, Draco reaches out to take it, gently unfolding the napkin to find a muffin resting in the centre of it, smelling even better from this place. Draco stares down at it, not a thought in his head, entirely blank between his ears. For some reason, this makes him feel as if he's lost all control. Every bit of his built-up confidence effortlessly blown to smithereens. And since it's Harry, it doesn't even come as a surprise. There's a rustle, and Draco is slow to look up, flustered beyond measure. But when he raises his head, Harry is gone. He looks around, and Harry's already at the house, slipping in through the door without looking back. Draco stares for a bit, then folds the muffin up, and waits to eat it until he's apparated back home. When he does, it tastes as delicious as it smells. You've been listening to From Love, Obviously, written by Bizarre Stars and read by Reverie Pie.